Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and I want to say thank you so much once again for taking time out of your busy life to join me today for the broadcast. Today is Monday, May 17th, 2021. For the last several days, in fact, a week ago, the people of Israel, the Jewish people, have been facing an unprecedented continuous assault, attack missiles from Hamas. Over 3,000 deadly missiles have been fired from Gaza onto the Jewish population for the last week, and it has been a tremendously difficult time for a lot of my Jewish friends. They will tell me stories of not having a bomb shelter where they live, or some that do have a bomb shelter, they'll show me a video of how their own bedroom is converted into a bomb shelter where they have to run into when they get the red alerts from their phone. This has been unprecedented, like I said. Israel has faced rocket attacks before, but this has just set the limits or set the standard for just how fanatical Hamas has become in their continuous terrorist, genocidal-type attacks on the Israeli people. Now, what I want to do this morning, I want to play several sound bites. But I want to set the stage and set the context for what's going on here. As usual, you have lots of anti-Semitic people, very liberal left news outlets, democratic liberal left news outlets that will continue with their anti-Semitic attacks on the people of Israel, stand up for the Palestinian, and make all kinds of false narratives about what's really going on here. The Jews are racist. The Jews are terrorists. They're killing the civilians in Gaza. And you have these ridiculous statements from members of Congress like Ilhan Omar from Minnesota or Rashid Tlaib denouncing Israel with their anti-Semitic viral attacks. And so what I want to do this morning is I want to bring us up to date with what's happening right now in Israel. Then I want to play some sound bites of just the sirens going off so you have an understanding of what my friends are going through. But just recently on Face the Nation, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu had some tough questions, I guess, from this liberal CBS affiliate, and he pushed back on some of these questions. So I want you to take just about 4 minutes, and I want you to hear this edited little program where Prime Minister Netanyahu was being interviewed. Let's listen.
Good morning, Mr. Prime Minister. Thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
I want to start with yesterday was the worst clash in this 7-day conflict. The last one of a similar sort in 2014 lasted 6 weeks. How much longer are these hostilities going to continue?
Well, we hope that it doesn't continue very long, but we were attacked by Hamas on our National Day, Jerusalem Day, attacks, unprovoked attacks on Jerusalem, and then thousands of rockets and missiles on our cities. And I think any country has to defend itself. It has a natural right of self-defense. We'll do whatever it takes to restore order and quiet and on the security of our people and deterrence. We're trying to degrade Hamas's terrorist abilities and to degrade their will to do this again. So it'll take some time. I hope it won't take long, but it's not immediate.
2,900 rockets fired on Hamas, according to one fired from Hamas, according to one report. But there's also a report that Egypt offered a truce. Hamas said yes. You said no. Why?
Well, that's not what I know. And frankly, if Hamas thought that they could just fire on our rockets and then sit back and enjoy immunity, that's false. We are targeting a terrorist organization that is targeting our civilians and hiding behind their civilians, using them as human shields. We're doing everything we can to hit the terrorists themselves, their rockets, their rocket caches, and their arms, but we're not going to just let them get away with it. Neither would you. I mean, you just imagine what would have happened if you had 2,900 rockets fired on Washington and New York and others. I think you would understand our position. I think you do, actually.
The precision of that targeting has been up for question. There's been a lot of focus on the bombing on Saturday in Gaza of a building that housed the Associated Press and Al Jazeera. The Committee to Protect Journalists demanded detailed and documented justification. This morning, there's a Jerusalem Post story that says the Americans were shown a smoking gun, that proof that Hamas was in that building. What is that proof, and did you show it to the Americans?
Well, we share with our American friends all that intelligence, and here's the intelligence we had. It's about Palestinian terrorist, an intelligence office for the Palestinian terrorist organization housed in that building that plots and organizes the terror attacks against Israeli civilians. So it's a perfectly legitimate target. And I can tell you that we took every precaution to make sure that there were no civilian injuries, in fact, no deaths, no injuries whatsoever. Well, I can't say injuries. I don't know if somebody received a fragment of a stone. I don't know that. But no people were killed. Now imagine, ask yourself, how is that possible? You see these high-rise towers that are used by Hamas over and over again. They collapse, and no one is killed. Why does that happen? Because we, unlike Hamas, take special precautions to tell people, leave the building, leave the premises. We make sure that everyone is gone before we bring down those terrorist facilities. And that's the difference between Israel and Hamas. They deliberately target our cities, deliberately target our civilians. They glorify the death of children and civilians and old people. They are happy with it. I think they're happy with any deaths that are caused to them. We grieve for every non-combatant loss in Gaza, and we grieve for all our civilians who die. We're not happy with it, and we try to minimize it.
I want to get to minimizing those.
All right, that is Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on the latest edition of Face the Nation. I like that he pushed back. This is a news organization that is left-leaning, and so they're going to try to appear to be neutral, but I feel with the kinds of questions that it appears that they are trying to again portray Israel as being overly aggressive, as killing civilians, etc. I want to face one of those objections right now. This is a common one that keeps coming up in the news reports. Israel is killing civilians in Gaza. Excuse me, no, this is not accurate. As the Prime Minister mentioned, Israel has a huge challenge, as you heard right now, because Hamas and Islamic Jihad hide their bases and equipment inside civilian buildings, including, that is, hospitals and schools. Despite that, as Benjamin Netanyahu pointed out, Israel goes to extreme efforts to avoid casualty. Israel is extremely precise in their targets and always gives civilians advance warnings first by calling people in the vicinity to warn them hours ahead and then giving an additional 5-minute warning with a safe tap on the roof. This is why there are so many videos of Gaza buildings falling. Everyone around knew it would fail. or fall, excuse me. On the other hand, 1 in 4 of the rockets Hamas and Islamic Jihad shoot into Israel, they fall short, and they land back in Gaza. And these fall on civilians was no warning siren and have killed many innocent women and children, their own rockets that don't completely are programmed to fly into Israel, but they fall short. They fall back in the Gaza. And so Israel only is killing militant Hamas commanders and participants and are not actively trying to kill civilians. I hope that clears it up. In fact, I want to take us just a couple of minutes to update us on the latest of actually the percentages of what's going on there. Since May 10th, there has been 820 plus terror targets struck in Hamas, 130 plus terrorists neutralized. 460 of the 3,000 rockets that have been fired on Israel have misfired. 3,150 of the rockets have been fired toward Israel. 10 Israelis have been killed. In fact, the picture of a six-year-old boy, it's just so tragic. He was one of the Israeli citizens killed. 90% of these missiles are intercepted by the Iron Dome above Israel. So I wanted to give you an update of exactly what's going on. I want to take us now to a brief news report a few days ago. So you can hear what my Jewish friends are going through. You hear the sirens and the trauma. I want you to hear this brief report about the rocket attacks from a few days ago. Let's listen.
Tonight in Tel Aviv, images that change everything in an escalation that has already spiraled so fast. Israel's missile defense systems lighting up the sky as they try to intercept incoming Hamas rockets. 130 of them were fired from Gaza in one barrage. Flights at the international airport were urgently suspended and diverted. Hamas said it was a specific target. And on the streets, injured Israelis, which, for Israel, will move this conflict onto a different level. The earlier Israeli assault on Gaza, which prompted the Hamas retaliation, had been relentless. And for those who are not the targets, but who are so often the victims, it is terrifying. With the weight of the Israeli Air Force on top of them, there is nowhere safe to run. Locals filmed the moment a 13-story building collapsed. It's not clear how many people were in it at the time. It is a residential block. The Israelis had earlier said that they were targeting militants in their homes. The number confirmed to have died through the day and the night before continues to rise. Children, too. Here, a mother and her son are buried. They're from a refugee camp. Most in Gaza are refugees. And in one of the hospitals, agony and defiance. This man vows revenge for the death of his comrade, a member of Hamas's Jerusalem Brigade. On the Israeli side of the fence, which locks Gaza off, in the city of Ashkelon, the air raid sirens sounded through the day. In the skies, the trails of Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system. It shot down most of the Hamas rockets. The Israeli communities here are used to attacks from Gaza, but not this many in just a few hours.
This is the third time it's happened since we've been here. You hear the wail of the sirens, and then moments later, sometimes the thud of the rockets as they come in. From Gaza, there have been scores of rockets over the course of the past few hours, most of them hitting here around this town.
A mile away, the home of an elderly lady and her carer, they both died, unable to get to the shelter in time. The Israeli Defense Forces spokesman was here, keen to show us what Israel faces from Hamas.
No one can look at this and see anything other than a tragedy that has happened here. But the images that are coming out of Gaza are truly horrific. It seems that what Israel is doing in Gaza is totally disproportionate to what is happening here.
I would beg to differ. I think that what we are doing are specific strikes against military targets inside Gaza that are part of the Hamas and the Islamic Jihad's military infrastructure.
We watched the Iron Dome intercept some of them as they flew north.
Let's go in. Come on, Mohammed.
Hamas claims to be the defender of the Palestinian cause, striking their occupier. Israel will strike back harder still, and the diplomacy to break this cycle isn't there.
I want you to just recognize some real serious problems with this news broadcast. I wanted you to know this. I wanted you to hear the sirens. I wanted you to get a feel for what my friends are dealing with traumatically every day. But this is an example of one-sidedness, not fair and balanced news reporting. The narrator keeps putting out the narrative that all of these strikes in Gaza are killing all of these innocent people and that it's disproportionate, as he said, and it's completely wrong. I've mentioned before the missile silos and the missile systems are set up right in the hospital roofs, right in the area of schools and civilians. And so this is deliberately done so that the Palestinians become the human shields for Hamas, and they can make the claim that Israel is deliberately killing civilians, and this is not true. They set their rockets up right in the locality of innocent civilians, fire them, some of them misfire, explode, and kill civilians. This is the problem. This is the narrative that the left wants to push in Europe and all over the world, that Israel is really the aggressor. Israel has a right to defend herself. Israel has every right to fire back, to retaliate for every one of these missiles attacks, and they do so strategically, again, targeting military, targeting Hamas commanders. So I want this really to be understood, because the left-leaning media, the anti-Semitism in a lot of these reports is very, very, very you can see it. You can feel it in their voice. You can see it in their eyes. It's so central to their news reports. So I just want you to understand that what is going on here is, once again, a way to portray Israel as the terrorist aggressor, the racist organization that has pushed Palestine out of their own land, and that you're doing everything they can to destroy them. And this is a false narrative. Now, what I want to do, I want us to understand what is the strategy of the Israeli military. I want us to understand what they are doing to stop these attacks and how they are getting together every day in a strategy to put an end to the Hamas terrorist attacks. One thing you need to know also before I play this, the missiles that Hamas is using are funded directly, from Iran. Iran is supplying them the money and the missiles that they need to do this terrorist attack. And unfortunately, our very own president, who gives regularly to the Palestinian cause, where do you think that money is going? It is going directly into the hands of the Hamas terrorists. Now, the Israelis will tell you completely up front, they care about the Palestinian people. They're very kind to them, and they don't want to see their lives destroyed. But this is what Hamas did when they moved into the Gaza Strip in 2005. This is what they did. They have taken over Gaza, and they have used their terrorist activities, and they have assaulted Jerusalem and other Jewish cities from Gaza since 2005. That's how long this has been going on. But right now, I want to take us to a Middle Eastern expert. Her name is Lisa Daftari. She used to work for Fox News, and she has a media outlet called The Foreign Desk. And she was recently on Newsmax and outlined the strategy for how Israel is going to deal with this onslaught of missile attacks. So I want us to hear right now on The Cross in the Desert. Here's Lisa Daftari.
Well, there was a misunderstanding about what the IDF's, the Israeli military's plan was in terms of retaliation. But what we do know is that Bibi Netanyahu, Prime Minister of Israel, has given the green light for the military to do a complete and targeted retaliation. Obviously, they are headed for the heads of Hamas, a terror organization. They are headed for the tunnels, this intricate network, which is called the Metro, of tunnels that was built within Gaza to have access to Israel's borders as well. The IDF had tweeted out that they were going to send in ground troops. They put these ground troops on the border of Gaza, Hamas believing that they would invade on the ground. That hasn't happened yet. These have been aerial retaliations so far. And again, I have to reiterate, these were targeted. They're going for not civilians, but going for weapons depots, and they're going for areas where the heads of Hamas are. And again, this very intricate tunnel system to try to eradicate these methods of terrorism within Gaza.
Lisa, let's talk about amassing the troops at the border. It's my understanding at this point they have not gone into Gaza, and correct me if I'm wrong about that. And if they were to do so, that might be a step they couldn't come back from, and there are some other risks involved as well because some of the other Arab countries there may decide to respond. Is that correct?
Well, they have not gone in. That is correct. And the reason for that is obviously they make their military much more vulnerable when they go in. Israel knows what it's up against. Look, when all the other terrorists go back to planning, Israel goes back to defending, meaning they have to be tip-top on their intelligence and all the ways in which they have to defend themselves from every corner, right? As you correctly said, they have Lebanon with Hezbollah in the north. They have Syria. They have Hamas, obviously, in Gaza. They have the West Bank as well. So they are surrounded in a very bad neighborhood, so to speak. They know what they're up against. So they're doing their calculations very, very appropriately. They have not gone in, again, that being a higher risk for the military. And because they know where these targeted areas are, they know where the tunnels are, they have mapped this all mapped out, there's no need for them to put themselves at an additional risk and to escalate the situation. The one thing that must be said that is missing from the mainstream media is to say that Israel doesn't want this. They want to go back to peaceful lives. I've spoken to so many people there, both civilians and people in the military over the last 72 hours. This is not what they want. So, of course, they'd love for there to be peace, for there to be a ceasefire, for them to put their weapons down. But because they've already come to a place where they have to retaliate, they have to put an end to this round of escalation, that's what they must do. But let's not be fooled that there will be peace in this manner. This round of escalations will stop, but in a few months, will we see this once again? And that's the question that we have to ask. When you see the mainstream media and the coverage that they're giving, it's just unfair to look at the numbers of casualties, for example, as a litmus test as to who is right and who is wrong in this scenario. Israel is a country of civilians who are defending themselves, and Hamas is a terror organization inflicting harm and terror upon its own civilians in Gaza and as well in Israel. Their charter says they want Israel off the map, and they're up against a democratic state such as Israel. So these are important points to remember when looking at the situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Lisa, we have about a minute left, but talk to us a little bit about those tunnels, because it's essentially a city underneath a city.
Correct. Now, I just want to go back in history just for a moment. In 2005, Gaza was cleaned out of all the Jews. They evacuated all the Jews to return Gaza to the Palestinians. Ever since then, they've used that as a launch pad to carry out attacks against Israel. They've given them basically geographic advantage to now have all of these attacks against Israel and to point their weapons at Israel and at civilians. This network of tunnels, it's called, again, the Metro, was built in the aftermath of the 2014 escalation called Operation Protective Edge. If you remember, that was yet another one of a scenario similar to the one that we're up against right now, where they were shooting in, Hamas was shooting in from Gaza into Israel. The Iron Dome protected Israeli civilians from a lot of casualties. It would have been much worse. But since then, Hamas has used this time to build this tunnel system because it works. It's underground. They're harder to get to. They can pass weapons through. They can pass terrorists through. And they can arrive at the shores of Israel very, very easily. So Israel is very fixated on eradicating these tunnel systems, on eradicating these terrorists, and eradicating Hamas.
Where do the tunnels go? Do they go all the way over to the West Bank, or do they just go into Israeli territory?
Yeah, they're mainly meant to go into Israeli territory. That's how they sneak operatives in. There have been attacks where they come right through and land up on the beach in Israel, for example. But these are dozens of kilometers, meaning it's a very, very, very intricate tunnel system in which they rely on. This is how they rely on to carry out these terror attacks. And again, we wish them well. We hope that they can understand, or at least the people, the Palestinian people, and here the mainstream media, the woke crowd, can understand what we're up against here. These are innocent people, both the Palestinians and the Israelis, who are up against Hamas, a terror organization that will do anything in its power to kill innocent people.
Yeah, Lisa, you hear some of the squad, you know, on Twitter talk about this and not necessarily really stand with Israel. Do you think that the U.S., is there anything that the U.S. should be doing? Do you think the Biden administration is doing its part? Israel's our strongest ally.
Yes, of course. And, you know, it took Biden quite a few weeks to get that call into Benjamin Netanyahu. Not good optics, where we're reaching out to the Iranian regime daily to make sure that a nuclear deal goes through. So what we could be doing is... what you could be doing is putting more pressure on lawmakers and on the Biden administration not to get back into that Iran nuclear deal without preconditions, without pressing the Iranian regime on their support of terror, their support of Hamas. They're paying for those missiles that are falling into civilian areas in Israel. They must be stopped. They're paying for the Houthis in Yemen. They're paying for Hezbollah in Lebanon. They're paying for Basiji terrorists in Syria. We have to stop them. They're the world's biggest supporter of terrorism. They terrorize their own Iranian people back at home. They're terrorizing all across the globe. And the Biden administration should not be sitting down at a negotiating table in Vienna with them to strike another deal.
That is Lisa Daftari of the Foreign Desk, formerly of Fox News. She's a Middle Eastern terror expert, and she just put everything in context and the right perspective for us. And I like the fact that she ended her interview on Newsmax warning the Biden administration to not re-engage with Iran in this ridiculous nuclear agreement, which Trump rightly tore up during his presidency. In fact, it's Iran that has been supplying the missiles for Hamas to use against Israel. This would not only be counterproductive, but it's throwing money at a nation that is the state sponsor of terrorism, and in turn, the money they would receive from the elimination of sanctions would turn around and refinance terrorist groups like Hezbollah and Hamas. So thank you so much, Lisa Daftari, for putting things into perspective. One of the other common accusations against Israel is their right to exist as Israel in the Middle East. It's often framed against them that they have stolen the land from the Arabs, from the Palestinians, when in fact, when you look at what Scripture teaches, and this is the beautiful part of the Bible, thousands of years ago, God promised his chosen people they would return to their rightful place of occupancy, their land. It's their land. In Ezekiel chapter 36, verse 24, God says, "For I will gather you from all the nations and bring you home again to your land. Then I will sprinkle clean water on you, and you will be clean. Your filth will be washed away, and you will no longer worship idols, and I will give you a new heart, and I will put a new spirit in you. I will take out your stony, stubborn heart and give you a tender, responsive heart." Now, that's a promise, too, that will be fulfilled when many of the dear Jewish people will come to faith in Yeshua, their Messiah. But notice what God says in his promise, "For I will gather you from all the nations," he's done that, "and bring you home again to your land." It was the Trump administration that recognized, rightly so, Jerusalem as the lawful, legitimate capital of Israel that belongs to the Jewish people. It was the Trump administration that took the embassy out of Tel Aviv and returned it to Jerusalem. This is so important, and Trump was, of course, a very big supporter of the Jewish people. Now, in case you didn't get the message, God also said in in Amos chapter 9, verses 14 through 15, I will bring my exiled people of Israel back from distant lands, and they will rebuild their ruined cities and live in them again. They will plant vineyards and gardens. They will eat their crops and drink their wine. Notice this. I will firmly plant them there in their own land. They will never again be uprooted from the land I have given them, says the Lord your God. God says he will gather them from the nations, return them to their land, promises and reiterates, I will firmly plant them there in their own land. They will never again be uprooted. Such an important promise that God has made to his chosen people that this is their land. Now, you will constantly also hear, well, why isn't there a Palestinian state? Why isn't there a two-state deal? Why doesn't Israel work with the Palestinians? Okay, we're going to do a little history here. We're going to go back in time. We're going to answer the question, why isn't there a Palestinian state? Let's listen.
If Israel just allowed the Palestinians to have a state of their own, there would be peace in the Middle East, right? That's what you hear from UN ambassadors, European diplomats, and most college professors. But what if I told you that Israel has already offered the Palestinians a state of their own, and not just once? But on five separate occasions. Don't believe me? Let's review the record. After the breakup of the Ottoman Empire following World War I, Britain took control of most of the Middle East, including the area that constitutes modern Israel. 17 years later, in 1936, the Arabs rebelled against the British and against their Jewish neighbors. The British formed a task force, the Peel Commission, to study the cause of the rebellion. The commission concluded that the reason for the violence was that two peoples, Jews and Arabs, wanted to govern the same land. The answer, the Peel Commission concluded, would be to create two independent states, one for the Jews and one for the Arabs, a two-state solution. The suggested split was heavily in favor of the Arabs. The British offered them 80% of the disputed territory, the Jews the remaining 20%. Yet, despite the tiny size of their proposed state, the Jews voted to accept this offer. But the Arabs rejected it and resumed their violent rebellion. Rejection number one. 10 years later, in 1947, the British asked the United Nations to find a new solution to the continuing tensions. Like the Peel Commission, the UN decided that the best way to resolve the conflict was to divide the land. In November 1947, the UN voted to create two states. Again, the Jews accepted the offer, and again, the Arabs rejected it. Only this time, they did so by launching an all-out war. Rejection number two. Jordan, Egypt, Iraq, Lebanon, and Syria joined the conflict, but they failed. Israel won the war and got on with the business of building a new nation. Most of the land set aside by the UN for an Arab state, the West Bank and East Jerusalem, became occupied territory, occupied not by Israel, but by Jordan. 20 years later, in 1967, the Arabs, led this time by Egypt and joined by Syria and Jordan, once again sought to destroy the Jewish state. The 1967 conflict, known as the Six-Day War, ended in a stunning victory for Israel. Jerusalem and the West Bank, as well as the area known as the Gaza Strip, fell into Israel's hands. The government split over what to do with this new territory. Half wanted to return the West Bank to Jordan and Gaza to Egypt in exchange for peace. The other half wanted to give it to the region's Arabs, who had begun referring to themselves as the Palestinians, in the hope that they would ultimately build their own state there. Neither initiative got very far. A few months later, the Arab League met in Sudan and issued its infamous three no's. No peace with Israel, no recognition of Israel, no negotiations with Israel. Again, a two-state solution was dismissed by the Arabs, making this rejection number three. In 2000, Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak met at Camp David with Palestinian Liberation Organization Chairman Yasser Arafat to conclude a new two-state plan. Barak offered Arafat a Palestinian state in all of Gaza and 94% of the West Bank, with East Jerusalem as its capital. But the Palestinian leader rejected the offer. In the words of U.S. President Bill Clinton, Arafat was here 14 days and said no to everything. Instead, the Palestinians launched a bloody wave of suicide bombings that killed over 1,000 Israelis and maimed thousands more on buses, in wedding halls, and in pizza parlors. Rejection number four. In 2008, Israel tried yet again. Prime Minister Ehud Olmert went even further than Ehud Barak had, expanding the peace offer to include additional land to sweeten the deal. Like his predecessor, the new Palestinian leader, Mahmoud Abbas, turned the deal down. Rejection number five. In between these last two Israeli offers, Israel unilaterally left Gaza, giving the Palestinians complete control there. Instead of developing this territory for the good of its citizens, the Palestinians turned Gaza into a terrorist base from which they have fired thousands of rockets into Israel. Each time Israel has agreed to a Palestinian state, the Palestinians have rejected the offer, often violently. So if you're interested in peace in the Middle East, maybe the answer is not to pressure Israel to make yet another offer of a state to the Palestinians. Maybe the answer is to pressure the Palestinians to finally accept the existence of a Jewish state. I'm David Brog, Executive Director of the Maccabee Task Force for Prager University.
To subscribe to our YouTube channel, click here. To help keep our videos free, donate here.
There you have it, Prager University. A very good walk down the history lane to understand exactly what's happening here. Five rejections from five legitimate offers from Israel. And then we are portrayed, that is, Israel is portrayed as the aggressor, terrorist, really? That is absolutely false. According to history, they have made the offer several times. In the midst of this trauma and conflict, my thoughts and prayers are with my Jewish friends in Israel. But I also pray for the Palestinians. I am praying for peace. I am praying that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Hashem, will bring peace to the Middle East. It is possible. It is not impossible with God, but I don't think it's possible with man. But he can bring peace. And I want to play now a beautiful song by Lamb. And it's dedicated to my friends in Israel. It's Comfort Ye My People. Let's listen. Thank you. That is the beautiful worship music of Lamb and Comfort Ye, My People, to my Jewish friends. Psalm 121 tells us what you and I can do for Israel. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. The turmoil and the conflict, the hatred, the wars can be one battlefield of prayer. When you and I lift up our comrades, our friends in Jerusalem, the Bible's very clear about this. Genesis chapter 12 says, he who blesses Israel, God will bless. But he who curses Israel, God will curse. Let us stand with our greatest ally today in love and in support and in prayer, and pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Pray for the tragic missile attacks to come to an end. God bless you. Thank you for listening today. I will see you again this Thursday on the Cross in the Desert. Have an incredible week.